All right. Hello and welcome to another episode of the I Can Do podcast. I'm Benjamin Lee. I'm super excited to be here. We have another fantastic guest. Thank you for listening wherever you may be in the world. Today, our guest is Corede Adewin, and she is the founder and CEO. She's smiling at me right now. Vim Moye Foundation. And the Vim Moye Foundation is a charity set up to build Africa's future workforce by increasing access to STEM education. Vim Moye supports over 10,000 students across the West African region through its partner organizations. Corede is also a trustee for East London Connect, an education-based charity that helps Black inner-city students in London aim higher and obtain a place within a Russell Group university. As a law graduate from the University of Warwick, she is passionate about giving other young people the same educational exposure she had. Corede, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
You are welcome. Thank you so much. And thank you for your patience as well with me. Thank you for being on the show. I want to get started here, and I want you to share with me and the audience, if you can, tell us this journey about how you have created your own foundation. You're the CEO of this foundation. You're striving to change lives in Africa and really in the world by helping other people to support and to encourage other people. What got you on this journey?
It's a long journey, I would say. It started probably 10 years ago now, actually, the journey towards this. I wouldn't say that I was the most likely candidate for this role, for this job, for what I do. I am the most unlikely person, I would say, to have done this. At the end of like sixth form, which we call like high school, I would say, for our American listeners, I was voted most likely to be the Prime Minister of the UK. That's how like non-focused I was on anything other
wow.
than where I am and what I wanted to do in the UK.
Yeah.
And so the pivot to a focus on Africa and changing lives there really stemmed from a trip I took in 2012 with my dad. He literally just asked me, do you want to come to Nigeria with me to visit? I was like, I mean, sure, why not? You know, I've got nothing else to do, and it's a free trip because he was paying, so I said yes. And and that literally sparked everything. It was the fact that I saw such a gulf between the hyper rich, the hyper wealth that I got a chance to like experience and see and things like that, to the poor, and the intersection between the two would be in the traffic. So the only time that those two worlds would collide would be when you're in traffic and hawkers, we call them, would come to the window of the car and basically beg, like either ask you to buy something or ask you to give to them. And everybody in the car would just ignore them. Like they would all look forward as because they're so used to it. But for me, it was a completely new sight. I was like, these people are asking for your help and nobody is listening. And so that started, I think, the thought process, I think that it was the seed that was sown in my heart in terms of especially seeing the kids. And my first question was, why are they not at school? Because at this point, at the time I went, it was a school period. And so I was like, what essentially can be done about that? I wish I went straight to what can be done about that. What I really did was run away and say, this is really none of my business. Like, why am I feeling this way about this? And I think, I'm sure many people can relate with that feeling of like, you see something that you really want to change, but you honestly don't think you're the person to change it. So you're hoping somebody else will do it. Mm-hmm. And I would say the reality is the thing that moves your heart, the thing that breaks your heart is likely the thing that you're called to do, the thing that you can't shake off is really the thing that you were made to rectify, to fix, to be a part of. And so I think that started my journey to becoming the person that I felt I needed to be able to do the job that I get to do now.
That's awesome. So it was 2012. You went to Nigeria with your father. You're in high school age, and you just see something you've never seen before. So you said you didn't do anything like immediately. So fast forward, what's the next moment when you start thinking more about, no, I do need to do something? How many, was it years, or was it months, or was it another trip that kind of sparked that that energy in the heart to say, no, I have to do something? Walk us through that next step. What happened next?
Yeah, absolutely. So I had that moment. I came back to the UK. So it was actually post-graduation from university. That was when that happened, this moment when I went with my dad. And so I came back and I had
Oh, okay.
recently declared that I didn't want to be a lawyer to my family and was trying to figure out what I was supposed to do with my life. While also trying to go through the ignore all the feelings that I was having towards why is nobody helping the people that I saw, when I was in Nigeria. This is the first thing I believe that we should do is to educate ourselves on that problem. How did we get there? How did we get to this point? What is the politic like in that country? What is the history behind that country? Those are the two things I started doing, just learning. I that made me comfortable enough to start asking questions. Start asking my father more questions because up until then we hadn't really had much of a conversation about Nigeria and its history. And it turns out he had so much to say and so much to teach me. And I then asked more questions, and he would then lead me to the right people who would be able to answer those questions. And so I built up my knowledge and as well my confidence through asking questions. And as you said, subsequent trips helped. So in subsequent trips, I purposefully went to areas that would teach me more. So in Nigeria, for example, there's somewhere called Badagry. Badagry is the slave port area where I learned more about our story and our history behind that. And that was really key because over time, I heard everybody I spoke to said, we're just waiting for our corrupt leaders to die out. And Badagry taught me that we've been waiting for hundreds of years for our corrupt leaders to die out. And so that was the moment when I said, okay, so that's not the solution then. And little by little, I got rid of what other people thought was a solution and started building new solutions. And Bimwe was birthed out of the solution that I came to the conclusion that education is the one way that I saw that people could bring themselves out of poverty, and be essentially architects of their own future.
No, that's awesome. I'm curious, what were and what remains even right now some of the big lessons that you learned from your father? So he's teaching you about Nigeria. I believe that's where you're from, correct? So what were some of those lessons? What has he carried away, and what impacted his life that also had an impact in you as you were going along on this journey?
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
Yeah, his stories would remind me of what Nigeria was like. So there were, it wasn't even always like this. We always said that we need better leaders, but there was a point where it turns out when we look back, the leaders weren't nearly as bad or as incompetent as maybe we have today. And so over time, we realized that there has been a deterioration in society in terms of the kind of leaders that we have developed. And so one of the things I learned from him, for example, was there was once a time that the naira to the pound was 1-to-1. So it was. Okay. I don't know how strong the pound.
What's the
is, right?
What's the naira?
The naira is the currency.
What's
in
the
Nigeria.
Naira? If I can.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. And the pound is in the
UK currency.
The money in the UK, correct?
Yes. So okay.
So it was 1-1.
It was 1-1. And compare that to today, and it's where it's 1-1,100.
Wow.
Exactly. Wow. So you can see the decline and see those are the things I was learning. I was like, okay, so things were not always like this. And understanding that was painting a picture of, because when you realize something has happened before, you realize you can make it happen again. So what the ideas and the vision I had for what Nigeria could be wasn't like the most outlandish, most ridiculous thing, because it actually at one point was once like that, you know? And so what we're doing is we're trying to return to what was, as opposed to build a whole new nation, you know? And that made it more possible to me. That encouraged me. So that's one of the things I learned from him.
Yeah.
Security is another issue we have in Nigeria specifically, and some people say other parts of Africa, but I caveat that because I always want people to realize that Africa today is not nearly as dangerous or as unsafe as people once thought. So for example, now out of 54 nations, 35 of them on the Global Peace Index are actually higher than the US. So that tells you everything about progress when it comes to safety.
Yeah.
That's going to shock a few people.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
But,
it is going to shock a lot of people. Yeah,
there it is. So Africa as a whole.
That's interesting too. And I'm interrupting. I'm sorry. That's interesting too, because there's a lot of assumptions people make, and what you're talking about is so important. About, well, maybe we should do a little bit of research and not assume certain things are the case, because we may actually be surprised that it wasn't as bad as maybe you thought it was or what other people thought it was. It was actually good for a long period of time. And that certainly would give, I think, me and other people, if people do that, encourage them and to say, no, something, we can make a difference and things can shift, you know, fairly quickly if we put the right amount of work into it.
Exactly. And so there, like you said, there are assumptions that we all made, myself included, that were debunked through research and through asking questions, you know, and this idea of corruption. That's another a conversation I had to have a lot. It came up so often. There's so much corruption. That's what's crippling our nation. But over time, when you ask more questions, I would say I came as quite an objective person, because like I said, I wasn't part of the conversation until the time I went, right? So my questions were very much from a I just want to learn perspective. And so people would say corruption is our biggest issue. Corruption is our biggest issue. But then I would ask questions about, okay, but what are the consequences if I do this? And no one could answer. And you start seeing that actually what we say as corruption being the biggest issue, or the human person is just happens to be more corrupt, an African happens to be more corrupt than somebody else in another part of the world, really comes from the fact that the systems in place, right, are not as strong as we see maybe in the West. And so, for example, I always say in the UK, we have this thing called the Oyster card. So when you go on TfL, which is our transport for London, it's the underground, and you have to tap in when you enter and you have to tap out when you leave on the other side. And people by default think, oh, like people do that because they're good people. No, people do that because there's a camera that will catch me if I do not tap in at the beginning. And if I don't tap out at the end, automatically I get charged like double the amount I would have if I didn't tap out. And so there are consequences and systems in place that mean someone doesn't have to watch me physically to do the right thing. But over time, I'm conditioned to just do the right thing. And so we expect that same behavior from a society that doesn't have the same systems and consequences in place. And so you start building this picture of, oh, okay, like the problems we have aren't like embedded in a particular kind of human being. Like, oh, the African person happens to be far more socially deviant than the rest of the world. No, we just have there are systems that are lacking, and those things put in place will bring about big change really quickly. So yeah, I have a lot of hope about these things.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's fascinating, and I appreciate that perspective, and I think that's important for everybody to really think about, just the assumptions that we make, the biases that we could have. And it has me thinking about a story in the Old Testament of the Bible, a man by the name of Nehemiah, when he saw his people in despair and the wall surrounding Jerusalem not rebuilt, you know, he came in and he observed and he learned, and you know, things changed in 52 days. So it's pretty amazing when someone comes in with the proper mindset and, you know, asking the right questions and the proper attitude, how things can quickly change really, really fast. And so that sounds a lot like what you're doing. So now I'm curious, okay, how long was this learning, gathering information mode for you? Then after you did all of that, what happened next? Is that when the foundation was started? How old were you when you're doing all of this, if I can ask? I know sometimes people don't want to share that, but I'm curious. You don't have to if you don't want to, but walk us through those next steps.
Yes, of course. So first of all, I actually wanted to make a comment about the Nehemiah thing. I smiled like a huge smile when you said that, because that's such a moment for me. I think that was one of the stories in the Bible that propelled what I do today. I would say, of all of the characters in the Bible, the one that fitted, and I said that's such a moment for me. So I really appreciate that you said that, because it literally is my scripture on my Instagram is Nehemiah. I think it's 6:3, which is, I'm doing good work, I come down. Like, Nehemiah is my person.
Yes.
So thank you.
Well, listen, I tell you what. That's one of my favorite books, and I'm in the process right now. I've put together a journal. It's called Arise and Build, and it's a 52-day journal based off of the story of Nehemiah, because, you know, he just got stuff done so fast. So I'm happy that you love Nehemiah, and you're exactly right. I have good work to do, so that's awesome. That is fantastic. I love that.
Yes. So with regards to the next steps, what happened was it took, I would say, a couple of years. And so all of this research and learning, also the next steps would be talking to friends and family about the ideas that would now come. So now I've done all of this learning. The next step was like field research, kind of like, or just, you know, pitching, as it were, to people in terms of, this is my solution, what do you think? I'd bring friends together in different fields and different spaces and pitch those ideas. I would also do that in Nigeria. I'd go to Nigeria and I'd speak to different people in the education space. So I decided education was definitely the avenue that I wanted to use to bring about change. But I wanted to know what was already being done. So I would speak to people in the education space and say, hey, this is the idea I have, what do you think? And every single time it would come back as, oh, we know someone doing something similar, talk to this person. And so I was like, if everybody's doing the thing that I've thought of, then what's happening? And I realized that everybody's working in silos. Everybody's doing things by themselves. And so they're drops in the ocean, you know? And for Nigeria, there are over 200 million people. So, like, if everyone's working, like, separately, I know, if everybody's working separately, then you cannot feel the impact, as opposed to if we came together. And so Vimoye was birthed out of the idea that we need to come together as a collective. That means the diaspora, and that also means people on ground. So what Vimoye really does is that we facilitate that kind of collaboration between the diaspora and organizations that already exist that are doing great work. How do we increase their impact? You know, that is the focus of Vimoye. We work with those who already exist, who are doing amazing work, and say, okay, this is what you're doing. How do we 10x that? literally, how do we 10x that? And we use the diaspora to increase the skills that they have access to. Many a times it's a lack of resource that means that they can't do as much as they need to do. And so we're encouraging the diaspora, we're encouraging those who have any kind of like interest in Africa to say, what skill do you have and how can we use that to build these organizations so that they're able to do their work at a greater impact, you know? And so yeah, that's how we got there.
That's awesome. No, that's awesome. That was actually going to be one of my questions too. What's the population or the size of Nigeria? You say the diaspora. Tell the audience, what are you referring to?
Yes. So the diaspora would be people of African descent. And so this would be either a displaced people or people who have voluntarily moved from the continent to other parts of the world. So that would include Caribbeans, Afro-Latinas, those in the America as well. So African-Americans as well would also be included in that. And then those of us whose parents just kind of like moved in, I would say like the 70s or so, 60s and 70s, they migrated for better opportunities. So all of those people make up the diaspora. And that's... about 350 million people, which would be the third biggest country in the world. So imagine if we're able to make that work. If we can all come together to build Africa, just see what's possible.
I love the illustration too of, you know, just a drop in the water, a drop in the ocean, you know, when people are trying to do things just kind of in a silo versus collectively. There's something to be said about that. So I'm curious now, all right, what did you ever have moments where you're just kind of talking to yourself or looking at all this? You're making trips, it sounds like, back and forth to Nigeria. You're talking, so you're on the ground, you're doing your own research, you talk to your dad. Did you have moments where you just kind of felt like, you know, what am I doing? You know, I could be doing something different. I think you mentioned, right, when you were in school, you know, you were voted most likely to be prime minister. You know, maybe I should go on a different path. Talk to us about how did you maintain this I can do mindset and focus on, no, this is exactly what I have to do. How did you overcome those obstacles, if there were any?
I think that I would say a long time. I can't even think of the years and I don't know when it stopped, but I would wake up daily and be like, have I ruined my life? Have I ruined my life? Because it was so far away from the idea I had for myself and there was nothing materializing. These were all ideas at this point. Nothing had come together at this point, but I couldn't get this thing like off of my mind. And so moving into this space when I could have been essentially, I was on a like the path to being a corporate lawyer, working in the city, doing well for myself. That was the life I had like created in my head for myself. And that this was so far from it. And so I would have to battle those fears and those thoughts. And before I was battling them by myself, but honestly, over time, it came with the word. Like it had to be God's, because at the end of the day, I believe that this came from God. And if I was convinced that this idea, this drive, this desire came from God, he would have to bring it about. And so letting that fear go and saying that, listen, Lord, I really can't do this by myself. I know that you chose me because of that as well, because he uses the foolish things of this world to confound the wise. And I promise you, that's what he did here. Right? He said, I'm going to choose this unlikely human being. And honestly, he has to get me the glory because I am so unqualified. It's laughable. And I don't know if you've heard this, but like I've heard it said that he doesn't call the qualified, he qualifies the call. And that's exactly what I feel he did with me. And so it meant that I had to lean on him on a level that maybe other people haven't had to. When we lean into what we're called to do, we have to lean on Christ to make it happen. It feels impossible by ourselves. And so my walk with God grew as a result of feeling so unqualified and not the right person for this job. And so I'm really grateful because I don't think I'd have the relationship I have with God now if it wasn't for the fact that I went on this journey. So regardless of anything, I have that as as something that I can hold on to.
Yeah.
But my faith grew, and through my faith, I was able to grow in confidence because I realized that, oh wait, this isn't me doing this. I'm not doing this for myself. I'm convinced that I was called to do this, and because of that, God has to bring this about. He has to make it happen because it wasn't my idea. Like, there's no way I could have thought of this by myself.
Yeah.
So we have this name for God in Yoruba. So we have it's called Oromoni Shefayati, which is the God who calls, equips, and so that's the version of God that I had to get used to, had to be introduced to, that if he called me, he will equip me, and everything that I need to make it happen, he will provide. So
I love your faith. Thank you for sharing that. And there's something to be said there about faith over fear, because fear is one of those things that will cause us to kind of stay like in the what if mindset or the what if mode. But you're exactly right. And I really appreciate you sharing that. There's something to be said about that, where we try to figure everything out on our own, and we want to use our minds, and certainly our minds can be used that way. We can create a lot of different things, but there's something to be said about trusting in the Lord and seeing what he's going to do. And it's always interesting how certain things line up the way that they do, way bigger than what we could ever imagine. So thank you so much for sharing that. That's awesome. Yeah. So let me ask you then, I'm curious now too about your faith. Is this something from your parents, or is this a journey you've been on as well?
It started through like family. So my parents are very much like, grew up in a very Christian household. And the way I very much, obviously we all come to our faith ourselves. Absolutely. I'm fortunate enough to have grown up in a Christian household, but I had to make that decision myself. Yeah. My parents showed the importance of the word and faith through how how we grew up. So the word of God was the final say and final authority in our lives in this household. So as a child, I had the right to question my parents if I felt it didn't line up with the word. That's really exciting for a kid. Like, your parents give you that level of power. Makes me kind of want to be like, hey, what's this thing we call faith? If that is the one reason I can question you, then I'm going to lean into this. So it was a great way to engage us as kids into like the word.
Yeah.
It's uncomfortable for parents. So it means that you give your child the right to question you, but it was the price they were willing to pay for us to be able to come to faith, like the full understanding of faith for ourselves. And we had deep conversations about faith, deep conversations about, what we thought was right or the right decision, just based on the word, because that opened up so much. And so I would say that's the foundation that was built through my parents. And I will forever be grateful for that. I would say my parents have done so much for me and so much for my siblings and I, but I would say that the biggest thing was faith. The biggest thing they could have given us, the inheritance of faith, I forever will be grateful, because I don't know how I would have done life. I don't know how other people do life without Christ. I honestly have no idea. So that's my starting point. But I would say at 18, I'd say it was when I officially would say for myself, was when I was like, oh, okay, this thing we call God, I'm all in. Up until then, I would say I was in, but I was questioning. I was questioning, being that I wasn't sure. I wasn't sure about my own salvation. I was always questioning, like, have I done enough to be saved? Have I, up until 18, where I got that revelation through an event that I went to as a kid, and it changed my life. That was the moment. That was the last time I went out for an altar call. I'd say every time an altar call happened before that, I went out for every single one. I said, just in case, let me just go again. But just before my 18th birthday was the last time I ever went out for an altar call, because that day I was sure that I was saved. and I'm
forever
that day.
Well, thank you for sharing that. So when did the foundation officially begin?
2020. So in 2020, January 2020, pre-COVID, I had no idea what was to come. January 2020, we launched, and we did this like a launch event, and it was super exciting. By mid-Feb, there was word about COVID and this idea of like we're gonna have a lockdown, and by March we went for a full-blown lockdown. And major problem, because the initial understanding I had of Vimwear was a very on-ground thing. I was going to be going in person to like help and to like just bring about change through that. And now COVID was here, and so we had to rethink the whole thing. And so it went remote. And actually, what we see as Vimwear today wasn't what I started as. It was because of the whole pandemic situation that meant the change happened. Like, as for everything the pandemic was, and I know it had so much, it caused so much pain and so much uncertainty, but I would say Vimwear wouldn't look the way it is today if I had gone with my original plan, because it didn't include the diaspora. It didn't include like remote help that we're seeing now, where individuals are helping organizations remotely using their skills. None of that would have happened if the whole pandemic shutdown lockdown thing hadn't occurred. And so yeah, I think that in life there are so many moments that we don't plan for that feel awful, because the pandemic was awful for
you. Cut all off there a little bit. Hopefully, there you are. Okay, good.
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yeah, you're still with you. You cut out there a little bit. No, that's all good.
Okay.
So you said that it started in 2020, and I think that's interesting too. You were talking about how the pandemic really shifted what it actually looks like today, and I always find that interesting, because whether it's a nonprofit group or some kind of company, you know, being willing to go with the flow and to, you know, wherever that river may lead is always an interesting thing, how we can have one thing in our minds, but it's actually gotten the foundation to maybe another level than what you had anticipated when you started in 2020. So tell us then, what's the foundation doing? It's 2023. Are you still going back to Nigeria? What's that look like for you? Are you traveling a lot back and forth, or are you primarily working out of London?
Yes, so mostly working out of London, but I touch base. I want to touch base. I try to touch base annually at least, just because it's important for us to, or for me to remind myself of the why we're doing what we're doing, who we're helping, and the larger aim, the larger vision. And that can be lost through the day-to-day rigors of like just doing what you have to do, you know? And so I try to remind myself of that, mainly because the current version that we have of Vimwear came out of a frustration of like, how do I make sure we're making the most amount of impact? And so I just literally packed a suitcase and went and spent a couple of months in Nigeria and Ghana. And was like, talk to me. Somebody tell me in terms of education space, talk to me about all of the problems. I want to make sure that the solution that we're providing absolutely hits the nail on the head. And so I think that that's so necessary to do as regularly as possible to make sure we're still hitting the nail on the head every time. So right now, our focus looks like two things, which is physical resources. We have a physical resource provision where we work with an organization actually based in the States that I heard you guys have lots of computers and laptops that you change annually. That's often.
Right? Yeah.
The school system is incredible. Wow. So this charity said that she just kind of, they take all the stuff and they ship it to other parts of the world. And so we work with them to do that. To like to Nigeria, to other parts of Africa, where literally the things that you guys don't want anymore, which are perfectly fine, ship them to countries so it doesn't go to landfill, because she said that's the other option. My goodness. So the organization is called Bridge in Africa, and it's just incredible work. They're based in New York, and literally they just help us send those things, and we just, like, in terms of funding it, we just make sure it's sent. We make sure that, you know, we can cover, what we're trying to do is cover the costs of sending it, the crate itself, but the resources themselves are completely free, which is just incredible. So the quality of the stuff is literally, a lot of it is like a year old tops, and some of it hasn't been used at all. It's insane. That could have gone to landfill.
Yeah, that is insane. Well, that's awesome.
Well,
you're doing such great work, Karede, and I appreciate you very much. When you're not working with the foundation, what else keeps you busy? Is this, you know, 60 hours a week, 70 hours a week? What else are you doing? What keeps you busy when you're not working with the foundation?
Yeah, I do a few things. The foundation is definitely my heart. The thing that I want to do, I veer towards that every time I have any moments. But I also work. I have a business. I have a job. There's other things that I do as well, most of which is remote. So I can definitely, which is really, really helpful. Essentially, I'm still doing 10,000 other things with this. But it's my heart towards, as I said, the work that is happening on the continent that draws me there, like, every single time. So still doing other things, but that is my focus.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love to read books. I'm curious, what book recommendations do you have for me and for the audience? Books that have had a big impact on you?
Oh my goodness. Yes, that books were actually such a key way of encouraging myself through the process of building Bimoye, in terms of, like, learning what was possible. One book that absolutely changed my life was Influencer. It's by Kerry Patterson. It's this idea that change in any society is behavioral. It's easier to change behavioral change than it is to try and change mindset. Putting things in place that, as I said, the idea of doing what's right as human beings actually is behavioral. There are things in place, consequences in place, triggers in place that make us do what's right. And so that book is a huge factor in terms of making me start thinking like that. Love that book for anybody who wants to make any kind of change, including in your home. They give examples of people who changed their relationship with their teenager, how their teenager thinks and functions and talks and all that kind of stuff can be done through this concept as well, behavioral change, as opposed to trying to change someone's mind. It takes way longer. Love that book for any people who want to make any kind of change in the world. Another book that I really love would be Atomic Habits. I'm sure everyone knows this one, by James Clear. I love that book. I know it's not overrated, because it's exactly the rating.
It's a good book. It's a great book. Exactly right. Yeah. I love he's got a great newsletter too. So every week he sends out, you know, three quick thoughts, and I'll share that on Facebook or something like that. But those are really nice nuggets. So Influenza, Atomic Habits. What else?
What else do I have for you? Essentialism. Oh my goodness, yes. I love this book.
Yes.
Who's it by? Greg McKeown.
Yes.
Essentialism. Oh my gosh, it changed my life from a perspective of I'm doing 10,000 things. I feel like I'm missing out. I come from a generation of, like, FOMO. So the fear of missing out is huge, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Freeing myself from that, it was key to me being able to focus and make the change that I've been able to make within Wea. Initially, it felt like I had to do everything. I had to see all my friends. I had to spend time with this. Now it's like, what's really important to me?
Mm-hmm.
Essentialism really helped me narrow those things down.
Yeah. That's awesome. So I'm curious, what's your relationship then with social media? I'm on social media, so I have a love-hate relationship. Some people have called me the Facebook hypocrite because I have deleted my account that I've gotten back on. Cal Newport, his book, Deep Work, I read that back in 2016. Have you read that?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So back in 2016, that's when I first started playing around with that. And I got back on for a fitness group, and I was just in the fitness group. I didn't have any friends. And so it's just that one particular focus, you know, being a part of that group. But I am on social media, Instagram and YouTube and Facebook. What's your relationship with social media? Because you're doing a lot, you're traveling a lot, you're working, you have, the Moye Foundation. You're the CEO of it. Walk us through that. Do you have certain boundaries with social media? Times of the day? What's that look like for you?
Yeah, my relationship with social media had to like change over time. Social media has evolved in my life. I remember like being like social media is like just the enemy, like of all progress, like mental health as well, like everything that you want that's good. I feel like social media was like the anti of it. But over time, I remember like just saying that to myself one time, and I really felt prompted. I really felt prompted that like this thing that I keep hating is actually, when used properly, is a tool mm-hmm. for the progress of the work that I keep saying I'm trying to do, to push the kingdom message, like, you know, telling people about Christ. So many people are there speaking hate and speaking negativity. Why am I not using the same platform to speak mm-hmm. love, kindness, mm-hmm. and the progress that I'm trying to bring about? So mm-hmm. I've had to really change my perception of it from that perspective. So that's the first thing that I would say in terms of social media. The second thing I would say is like, it's still a time drain. It's still mm-hmm. it's still a time drain, despite the fact that I've like changed how I see it. And so I've had to put like parameters on that, like timer. I'm going to be honest, the whole willpower thing is something a long time ago that I decided doesn't exist. This concept of willpower, we have a finite amount a day, and I'm not interested in using that to stop myself from going on social media. Mm-hmm. So instead, I just put a timer that locks me out.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I've put 30 minutes on Instagram, and then another 30 on LinkedIn. Those two the two that I tend to be on.
The two biggest. Yeah,
that's, I would say, the case. Sometimes, and let me be honest, that like for full transparency, there are times I've had to increase that because I've had to like mm-hmm. post for longer or something like that. But on a good week, it's 30 minutes.
Yeah, that's good. So is that 30 minutes a day or 30 minutes a week?
A day.
That's legit.
There has to be included about replying things that I've posted. I would have done all of my social media posts, for example, for the week in one go. Yeah. I do that on not via my phone. I do that on like one of those online spaces that allows you mm-hmm. to basically plan your social media activity. So I don't count that. If I counted, that would be way out.
Gotcha.
But in terms of actually just being on there scrolling or replying messages, 30 minutes a day, time to do that, things like that. So I spent a good amount of time putting together this notion. It is time consuming initially. The setup is time consuming, but it just has paid itself, paid dividends. Like literally, it's incredible.
Yeah.
So highly, highly recommend Notion and
Notion. Okay.
Putting that together based on yourself. Another thing I use, this is a tool I don't use as much now, but it was really pivotal in getting me to focus. It's this thing called Focus Mate. I don't know if you've heard of it before.
I have not.
Yeah, so Focus Mate is a space that you literally meet random people across the world, right, at a particular time. So you set times onto a calendar, and it matches you with somebody else anywhere in the world that is also working at the same time. So you say to them, I'm working on this now in the next either 25 minutes, 50 minutes, or 75 minutes. And at the end of that session, you come back and say whether you achieved it or not. It is surprisingly it is crazy how like a random person on the internet keeps you accountable just because they're there.
Now, I think I have heard of that. Now, can you see the person when you're doing the work?
Yeah, you can.
Is that distracting though, or no?
No, so they're there, but like if you're working your laptop, you change the tab anyway, so you don't end up seeing them, let's say. But if you're working on paper, is when you really see them. But it's so good to see the timer, because you know only for that period of time you have to focus. So when I'm really unfocused, when I really am struggling with focus, I jump on that. And that was really pivotal in getting the mindset of focus initially. And so I don't jump on it as much now, because there are so many things I just have to do because of time limit that I just get them done. But there was a time when I was like manually engineering things to happen. That meant that if I don't do them, they don't get done, and there's no progress. But now, like, things are happening such that the feedback requires me to do them. So things are happening. But for anybody out there who is just starting out on anything and needs to push themselves, Focus Mate is really great for that.
That's awesome. Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. You mentioned goals. Where did goal setting come from? Did that come from your parents as well? And do you have a set amount of goals that you strive to hit each year? Like in the Full Focus Planner here, you know, he recommends like 7 to 10 goals, and then he'll break them down quarterly. Do you have a set amount of goals that you're trying to attain each year?
Yeah, so I sit down at the beginning of each year. Usually, actually, I sit down the year before and plan for the next year. But this year, I'll talk about how I did it this year. And I took out all of January to sit down and plan. I didn't start anything until I sat down and planned. And I was very adamant that I wanted to do that from not a space of like, I wish and I hope, but from like seeking God, like sitting with the Lord and being like, what is the focus for this year? What do you have for me this year? You know? And I spent like the whole of January focused on that and then put something together. And so I did that for my personal life, my foundation, my business life, and even my spiritual life. Where do I want to go with that? And I broke all of those things down to steps as well. And so that's why Notion, for example, feeds me my next thing, because every step has been like put together. And so I'm like, oh, okay, to achieve the next thing, this is the step. This is the step.
Yeah.
I project managed my whole life at the beginning of the year, basically. And it's now.
I love that, because you took a whole month just to meditate, to pray, to plan.
Yeah.
Are you still working your current job during that time in January? Or are you just taking like almost like a sabbatical?
No, I'm still working, and I'm only doing what I have to do. So like in any space, so to work, I would just continue to work and things like that. But I wasn't working on Vimoye or anything. Like everything else stopped. Anything that didn't have to happen, didn't happen. So including like seeing friends or like literally stopped.
Everything stopped.
Everything stopped for a month.
That's a great idea. I may need to try to do that in the month of January.
I would say this is set out to be probably my most successful year. The things I've written down and everything, in terms of, I'm looking back already and I'm like, my goodness, like it really worked. It's incredible. So
Did you come up with that idea? Just, hey, I'm just going to do this in January, or was that from past experiences, or did you kind of just intuitively say, I'm just going to take the whole month off, just do the bare minimum?
So previous years, I would do it in November, funnily enough. In November, I'd start asking God, oh, okay, like, what do you have for me this year and things like that. But what I realized was I wasn't finishing the year. I was already thinking about the next year. So I don't know what it is, but this year I said, end of last year, I want to live to the end of the year. Like the 31st of December, I'm focused up until then about the goals that I've already made or anything that I'm working on to the 31st of December. And it was risky because I've never done that before. I usually have already started planning the next year already. But this year I wanted to make sure everything 2022 had for me, I got. Like that was that. And so for the new year 2023, it meant that I had to risk taking out all of January to do that. And it has been the best planning decision that I've ever made. Because January as well is a down period for a lot of people. After Christmas, most people, I don't know what it's like in the US, but in the UK, we have things called like dry January. So people aren't going in the UK, drinking is a huge sport. Like sometimes it seems like, but it meant that for a whole month, most people aren't calling you out anyway because they're all at home doing dry January and saving their money or any. So it's the perfect time to be like, I'm staying in because they're like, oh yeah, fair enough. You're probably trying to save money or you're detoxing because you ate so much over Christmas, things like that. It's such a normal response to be like, I'm not available in January. And so January was set up to be a perfect time to just down tools and focus. And so
did you notice things that went by the wayside that you had maybe in your mind when you took those 31 days off? Did you just see, you know what, for the most part, everything kind of stayed the same. So for me, I love this idea, and I'm thinking about, you got me thinking about doing it next year. So I already have certain things planned for next year, Lord willing, Bible class schedules, you know, preaching at different churches and things like that, different dates for family and things like that. But there's something that I really like about this, even like with podcasting or coaching or, you know, just other goals, just taking that whole month off and just doing the bare minimum. Did you notice a big change with what you wanted to do? And then after those 31 days, what eventually just came to the top?
You mean like extra things that I hadn't thought about doing that came to me in January?
Either extra things or things you had thought about, but then you're like, no, I really don't need to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. There were things I absolutely didn't even like occur to me that this year would like I'd focus on this year that definitely came to me in that month. Because I think as well, what usually happens for me is when I'm planning the year, I'm already like 10, all of the things I already have in mind of what I'm going to do. It isn't like me being open to the idea of what's possible. I'm like, okay, I'm going to do this. I literally think from my mind, if that makes sense, of like, what do I want to do when I do them? This year, I said to myself that I don't have any like tangible things. I would desire to do things in terms of Vimeo or desire to, but I want to really think through what that looks like. And I wanted to do that with the Lord. I wanted to do that with him. And so I was open to the fact that he might take something off the list or like something else could pop up that I had not planned for. And that essentially happened. There were things on there that I hadn't really thought, especially when it came to Vimeo. Our focus this year has very much wouldn't have been what I would have initially done had it not been for that year, for that month of just being like, I'm open to whatever. So highly recommend. I can't wait to do it again next year.
You've sold me. I'm gonna do it, Lord willing. I'm gonna do that. I That'll love that great. Idea.
Please let me know how. I'd love to know.
I am. Thank you for that.
No problem.
Corriday, this has been fantastic. Thank you so much for the great work that you're doing. And thank you for, it's late there in the UK in London. It's only 2:15 here PM in Dallas, near Dallas. Yeah, I still got about 10 hours left in the day. Final thoughts for the audience. What would you like to share? Final thought before we wrap up?
Yeah, I think my final thing would be that I really want people to realize that when it comes to the progress of Africa, we want to move away from Africa Rising, that's the narrative that I feel like we have been on for quite some time, to Africa actualizing, like actually becoming the very thing that we know is possible. And I think that that doesn't mean that means all hands on deck. I think that means that the diaspora need to get involved. And that's why we're doing our skills match program, because we really want diasporans to realize that the skills that they have acquired in the diaspora would be of so much benefit on the continent. I don't know if you've heard of something called the brain drain. The brain drain is this idea that the smartest and the brightest on the continent moved away when other opportunities came about. I spoke to a Canadian recently that said that's the same thing that happened there. Like Canadians had that a similar thing, hence why there's this opportunity now for people to come to Canada to work. But because of that brain drain, it means that those who maybe would have started the business or would have started the solution to a particular problem are not necessarily there. And so we're saying diasporans, with the skills that you have acquired in the West, let's use them to build the continent. And we're doing that through our skills match program. So check out our website and sign up.
Tell us, what's your website? Where can people find you on social media?
Yeah, so our website is vimoyefoundation.org. And you can find me personally on Instagram using the handle This Is Korede. So Korede is K-O-R-E-D-E. And then Vimoye, the Vimoye Foundation as well. So you can find us on Instagram under the Vimoye Foundation.
Yeah. Well said, Korede. Thank you so much. Love what you're doing. Love your spirit. Thank you so much. Keep going and look forward to seeing what you're going to be doing here in the future.
Thank you so much for having me. I had a wonderful time.
You're welcome. Likewise. Take care.